You're listening to The People's Show.
You come at the King, you best not miss.
Left circle, Besser, one time slot shot, he scores. Brock Besser beats Jordan Binnington on the power play, and the Canucks are up 4-0.
With Seth, Dan, and Randeep.
The biggest thing to hit Canada because the Maple Leafs suck.
On the official home of the Canucks.
Goes all the way down the ice, here's Pettersson after it. He's got a chance at a breakaway. Pettersson in clean, is tripped by Murray, but he scores. Dinky Pete comes out of the box and puts the puck into the back of the net.
Sportsnet 650.
Welcome, citizens of the People's Show. We come to you live on Sportsnet 650 on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. The People's Show is with you until 7 o'clock on this Friday evening. Need you to be a part of it. How do you do that? 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. The smart alternative, visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. You can also listen on demand via podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, subscribe, leave a review, bang a follow button. All of it, we do appreciate it very much, and that way you never miss an edition of The People's Show. You can stream live on the Sportsnet app. And a big show today as we welcome in Yannick Hansen, as we do every Friday. He's going to jump on at 3:30 today. Brian Burke, Pittsburgh Penguins president, will be joining us coming up after 4 o'clock. Interested to hear what Berkey might have to say on the show today. Matt Lee, BCLC at 4:30. Tim Booth on the Seahawks and where they go from here after 5:30 today. What's up, gentlemen?
Oh, man, another beautiful day in Vancouver. It's a sunny Friday, so vibes are good.
Vibes are good. And we are – my mentions on Twitter have been inundated with pictures of people's feet / footwear.
The footwear I don't mind. Don't take pictures of your feet and send it. There was one individual that decided to do the feet thing. It's not my thing.
Might have to – like the toe fungus thing? I don't know.
Yeah. Stay away from that. We're all about the debate. We've been having it all day, and I don't want to get into it right now, but we've been having the debate. We're all for it. Bring it to social. Let us know what team you're on.
So not going to lie, Randeep walked in, and he's like, I've been checking people out today.
Yep.
Trying to see how many people are wearing Blundstones.
What do you have on your feet?
The first Blundstones I saw in Mount Pleasant.
Yeah.
Rest of the city, didn't see them.
Randeep's just yelling out the window. Are those Blundstones? Are they?
No, my eyes work, Reach.
The Australian boots?
I can see.
Okay. That wasn't
just
you?
I'm just fighting the people's fight of your bogus claim.
But
that's
if you're going to do...
your bogus claim.
Randeep, like, you're like the one guy. It's like your bogus claim. It's like, dude.
There are dozens of us. This whole city feels that way.
There are dozens of you. Exactly.
Many dozens of us.
Even Lena here, our colleague, OT, every week here on Sports at 650.
Selectively picking people,
She fully admits that she is agreeing with you that she doesn't like Blundstones, that she doesn't think they're fashionable, doesn't love them.
She's very much anti-Blundstones.
But at the same time, says everybody wears them because it's a Vancouver thing.
I love how you leave out facts. She also mentioned she accepts that it's a regional thing as well. She's from North Van.
Everybody in North Van wears Blundstones.
Randeep went from like it's a Mount Pleasant thing to a Mount Pleasant everywhere thing to, okay, some neighborhoods don't have it.
Hey, especially a Mount Pleasant thing. I don't frequent North Van that much. Spoiler. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
People in Langley are texting in.
Like, we have one here. Person texting in. All right.
One person.
All right. Be out in those streets and tell me.
He's like, not in Killarney, all right?
Unlike you, I get around in the city, Reach.
Okay.
Drive around a little bit.
Randeep's just driving around. If you find somebody might be like checking out your footwear while you're walking around the city, it's probably Randeep Janda, okay?
East of Commercial, I'm everywhere.
Okay.
Unlike you, just walking around Mount Pleasant making these bogus claims.
I don't just walk around anymore, you know? Went around town looking for a good panettone today.
I like how you said, didn't say anything about the bogus claims, though.
You know, Randy reminds me of Brandon Marshall, like just so confident in being wrong and just yelling at us.
Not wrong.
I'm telling you, NBA contracts are not guaranteed.
No, they ain't. He's just yelling, like veins popping out of his head. I'm like, all right.
I'm calm, boys. That's a CBA he was refuting. I'm not refuting any CBA words. There's no actual paper on this.
There's the same level of certainty, which is very concerning.
Love it. Blundstones. All right. 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line.
And apparently, we have some issues with our transmission. We see the text messages that are coming in. But, yeah. So.
Okay.
No. Well, hopefully they fix it.
Yeah. Hopefully, hopefully we'll get this... this sorted out, or maybe we'll get the rest of Friday off.
Yeah,
who knows?
We got this one. You sound good, guys. I don't know if that's actually sounding good. Or
others are asking if we're still here. Yes, we are here. We're physically here. We're here.
Just my area, or are you having massive technical issues? Yeah, we're working on it. So, if you're listening live, apologies and. You probably can't even hear this because you're probably hearing music or something else.
Yes.
So we're working to figure it out. All right. Now, I think with the Canucks back in town, we all wondered if these 2 days might be the time that the Canucks make the sweeping changes they've been thought to make for a while now, but clearly they have not made that decision just yet. Still some deliberating on what the next steps forward are. Should they want to make those next steps in the near future? But there's still something that, or they're still working through that process is probably the best way to put it. Now, to start this conversation off, and I think it's getting to a point of what's the holdup for me personally? What are they waiting for me personally? And I think I've been there for a while. But here's Elliot Friedman today on the Jeff Merrick Show and talking about what's going on with the Vancouver Canucks as they decide the future of the club.
I think that the thing I've heard about Vancouver is, and I heard it again this week, they are basically going through every available name and seeing what they think about this, or you know what kind of the picture is around them. I would believe that Mellenby is on their radar. Yes, you know I don't necessarily know if that means anything yet in terms of him being a favorite or anything like that. But I guarantee you that they know he's available and they're looking into it. I just don't know. Like, I don't get a sense that there's any one favorite at this particular point in time as we talk about it right now. I think they're still going through it. And basically I heard is that they're just doing like big audits of everyone who's available to kind of figure out where they want to go.
Is there a chance they do this all season? That they go through the entire season like this?
I don't want to get radioed, so I'm going to be careful and just say that I'm going to stick to my line because I think it's the truest thing I can say about Vancouver. They're not going to make any long-term changes until they're sure they found the people they want to hire.
So there is Elliot Friedman on the Jeff Merrick Show today. They're not going to make any changes until they found the person they want to hire. That's not all that different from anything we've reported here on the show. It's not all that different from anything you've heard Sat say in the past couple of weeks. But the problem is, it's been a couple of weeks now, and it's... like, I get it. I get you want to go through your process and hire the right person. But it just feels there's going to be a point, and I think personally for me, I'm already there where it's like are you just using this as an excuse to continue buying yourself more time? Because your franchise, while the games are happening and everything else, it's stagnant. It's in purgatory. It's stuck in cement. Like the future of the franchise hangs in the balance while you are making these decisions. And we know that Jim Benning, or we've heard Jim Benning, doesn't have a lot of, you know, ability to make any sorts of moves or decisions other than day-to-day regular things. So what are you really doing here? Would you not be better off handing it to an interim to do some little things while you continue to go through this search for the next person to lead the Vancouver Canucks?
I think part of it, like I mentioned from the very beginning, there was no desire to do anything this year, right? Like, they don't want to do anything this year. This wasn't the plan at all. Now, when you're crafting a fallback option and assessing all your options at this point, I know people want to see change happen. I understand. Like, hey, I'm not disagreeing about it at all. And I'm not saying, you know, it shouldn't happen or anything. But it's not nothing this organization wants to leap into. And I understand the notion of, okay, bring somebody in on an interim basis. But if you are trying to bring somebody in to assess everything and come up with a clear path forward, I think they feel like maybe it just muddies the waters. Now, maybe you get to a point, and it hasn't happened yet at home, right? Okay, what have we seen on home ice? A few sparse fire-bending chants here and there. That's pretty much it, right? Outside of that, you haven't heard much at the rink. There was the booing them, but they were underperforming. If it gets really nasty, they keep losing, maybe then they feel like, okay, we got to do something, bring somebody interim in. But I don't think they're there yet as far as that they have to make that move and then just have somebody in the interim basis. I think they don't want to feel pressured into making an announcement quickly. And I think this is the reason why it's taking a lot longer. And until they really figure out what they want to do, I don't think they want to do anything.
Yeah, I can understand if you're saying, hey, we have a plan in mind and we're not going to buckle to pressure in the immediate sense because there's a bigger picture play here. We want to get this done right. I can understand that. But if a part of this play is, hey, we got to see how the crowd reacts or how nasty it can get, I'm not a huge fan of that. I understand from a business point of view why it might affect mm-hmm. you, but if you're going to stick to your guns and play the long game here, like, stick to that. Stick to that process and not necessarily be worried about the reaction. Hey, Montreal, a fan threw a jersey on the ice yesterday, and they made changes. Mm-hmm. So if it gets nasty one way or another, the fan base here in Vancouver is going to be pissed off either way, whether they make a change, they stink after the change, whatever happens. So that negative reaction will always be there. It's important to get it right. And I know, you know, even last week when they were losing...
Nobody's disputing that.
No, but my point is, though, if you are in the situation of where you're saying, okay, let's see how this goes out at home first and how nasty the crowd is. The crowd's going to be nasty. Your team's not good.
Well, I think it's more and more than anything, it's about until they feel like their hand has to be forced. And it hasn't happened yet, whatever that is, right? Like, I think that's what I'm seeing more than anything is they're not going to do something until A, they know for sure who they want to hire and who they want to bring.
And that's the most important thing.
Right?
Yeah.
Or two, somehow, some way, their hand gets forced before that. And what is that? I don't know, but we clearly haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. Is it another, like, bad losing streak? You know, as much as the opening homestand was not good, they were all close games, right? They finished with 5 of a possible 14 points in that initial homestand, but they were close in all those games. You know, they lost in overtime to Anaheim. They lost a couple other one-goal games. They didn't have terrible performances. They had terrible results. You're seeing that even more over these last stretch of games. They were awful in Pittsburgh. The rest of the road trip, they played hard, close games, maybe deserved more points than they ended up with. And when it's like that, you know, a lot of fans aren't going to be over the top angry about it. Of course, the diehards will. Those that have been clamoring for change for years will continue to be on their soapbox and really get into it. But as bad as it's been from a result standpoint, it's unfair to say that the efforts, the performances on the ice have been that bad, barring a few games. The results, though, are disastrous. And they've led you to this point where you're already making a decision on your franchise's general manager just a quarter into the season. But the longer this goes on, the more time you're wasting on, you know, planning for the future, planning for next season, getting a new set of eyes on this organization to see where you can improve. And that's a lot of things. That goes beyond just the roster. Where are some gaps that could be filled that can help the organization and their process better moving forward? Like, you know, they're all kind of cliche things, but they need to be done. And really start to build that culture, that leadership that we talked about within the organization that just hasn't been there.
I get that. But, you know, 1 week ago, we were talking about the efforts on the ice and how it had been. And yeah, at that point, especially, it was embarrassing. Watching some of these games was embarrassing.
The Pittsburgh game was awful.
It was awful, right? But I don't put too much stock into the two games that they beat, Montreal and Ottawa, but they're positive vibes. They are building confidence in the team. In that sense, when you're looking for the right candidate, you know, last week was a little different because they were getting embarrassed on that ice. That Pittsburgh game was a bad look. Now you fast forward, if you don't have that right candidate, I can understand the long-term planning aspect of it, but this isn't the trade deadline yet. I think that is the deadline a month before that, maybe the trade deadline, a little bit before that, where you're saying, okay, what's the clarity? What's that moment? I get it right now in December, you're probably looking at it and saying, okay, it's not an ideal circumstance, but if you don't have that individual in place, if you don't have that long-term target that's going to be making and setting that direction and vision, the situation has changed since last week. The temperature was really high. It's still high in this market, but a couple of wins can at least buy you some time. And that's what's happened here. So while I get the trade deadline is the most important part, it ain't the trade deadline yet, man. We're not even a month. We're 2 months away from the trade deadline. It's a long way to go still. So that making decisions aspect is true, but you still have to make sure you got the next person lined up. So I'm not freaking out over that yet. The big picture is important, but it hasn't happened yet. That's all right. Give it a little bit more time, maybe some more clarity on this team and what they are, because some
what
people...
What more do you need to see, Randy?
I've seen what I've seen. I said those two wins yesterday, Reach, were against bad teams. But for the people in Rogers Arena, on Pat Kuhn and Way, maybe they need to see a little bit more. And I guess we're going to find out tomorrow what this team is when they play a good team.
Well, I mean, here's the thing too, though. When you've won a couple of games in a row, there's maybe this sense now that, okay, we'll be patient. Maybe we'll see kind of what happens. Everything feels better. Even a couple of wins against Ottawa and the Habs. I do think for the organization, they feel a bit of a sigh of relief. That's why I think the Saturday game is very, very interesting. Because if you come out and really play well and win another one, I think the organization takes another deep breath and says, okay, now we don't feel like we got to. Because, hey, at the very least, you're right, Dan. For the rest of the season, you got to see different things, or you have to evaluate, you have to come up with a plan long term, all those things that have to happen. But also what has to happen is you have to see individual performances get better.
Yeah.
Right? And every game that gets played now is another game to evaluate your core, your team, and what you think of what's happening moving forward. And even if you bring somebody else in, all these games are on record. It's not like you can't assess all this stuff, right? And I think there's a sense of, hey, somebody comes in and they're going to blow everything up. There are a lot of people in this organization that they do have to keep. You know, nobody comes in and gets rid of every single support staff or every single person in a management team and starts anew.
Yeah, you don't replace everyone overnight.
Exactly. So you're going to have a lot of people here too. So I think what's really important beyond everything else, because I'm with you guys when it comes to direction and all that sort of stuff. But more than anything, what about these individual players? When does Pedersen get back to being his best, right? Brock Besser. He's got, what, 9 points?
He's on pace for 31, guys. 31 points over a 72-game schedule. Which,
you know?
Like,
so, I mean, these are things we got to see. And yes, organizational direction has to kind of be determined here. But we got to start seeing these guys perform. We got to start seeing what the ceiling is again. Because if these guys don't turn it around, you know, forget wins and losses. Forget manager or GM or coach or whoever. You know, it's going to be what you have to work with.
I think we all agree that long term, something's got to happen, right? Something's got to happen, because if you look at this team, they might make a push out of something here down the stretch, but playoffs are very, 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 very unlikely. So that long term change is coming. It's just a matter of what happens first. Do you find the right person? Do you make those changes? Or, Sat, to your point, do some of these players wake up? Because if anything, it buys the organization a little bit more time to maybe do that search, maybe to get the right person or people involved. And that should be the most important thing. Situation has changed from last week. And even though they're two easy wins against Montreal and Ottawa, they are still wins. That does kind of bring the temperature down a little bit. But long term, you know what needs to be done.
It's with Brock Besser specifically, that's a player who their immediate future is probably one of the most pressing questions the franchise has, right? Like, you still got time on Miller and Horvat, ultimately, right? Because they still do have a year left on their deals. And sure, Brock, you own his rights beyond this season, but that $7.5 million qualifying offer, you know, it's questionable right now with the season that he's having and how you go about handling that situation. You don't have a lot of unrestricted free agents to worry about. You know, the situation with Brock, given your cap, it's one of the most pressing questions that this organization has. And that's, you know, that ties into the, you're evaluating constantly what is going on here. I have a hard time believing you can kick this can down the road that much farther. Like,
what's your date then?
I feel like I've already been there, you know?
No, really? I get it. From a, hey, you want to see something happen, I get it. But as far as that you can meaningfully assess things and come up with a plan and move forward, like to craft that, to be able to take over and move this thing forward, what's the real date?
I'll give you a date. 1 month out of the trade deadline. I want January, 5th, 6th, or around there. I want some clarity on what's going on with this organization by then.
Mid-January is probably what you're looking at in terms of setting this team up for the rest of the season. But if they kick this can down the road for the rest of the season, which doesn't seem to be out of the realm of possibility, given how things have gone here, I think that could be a big mistake by this team.
Well, here's one thing, right? Because there's a sense that they have to do something at this trade deadline. And hey, I don't disagree. Every trade deadline is an opportunity for you to explore and see what you can do, right? But what do we know about the Canucks situation? A lot of their players are underperforming.
Yeah.
Their situation is not great and their leverage is not there. So are you actually going to get some great offers at the deadline for whether it's JT Miller or whoever you might shop? And hey, I'm not saying they're shopping JT Miller. They're not shopping JT Miller.
No.
Hypothetically, just throwing out a name and saying a new guy comes in and says, I want to do something different here. Is his value going to be a lot different at the trade deadline as opposed to what it's going to be in the offseason when more suitors can get involved as well and how good JT Miller potentially is, right, and what value he has? I don't know if it changes dramatically, especially because of the Canucks' current situation, contenders, and how many teams can really get in on it, right? And he's the type of player...
Cap space as well, because there's not much free cap space right now.
And he's a needle mover. And if you, let's say, come up with a creative deal and retain some salary even or whatever, I mean, you might do some things that can really grow that value. And who's really the guy they have to trade the trade deadline?
Tyler Mott.
Essentially,
sellers,
right?
Yeah.
Right? And hey, if you're sellers. So
I think...
I'm with you here, Dan, but I'm not saying they don't have to make a move. But I'm just saying if we're actually assessing what has to be done at the deadline versus what has to be done or could be done in the offseason... The Canucks only have one or two guys on expiring deals. Everybody else is kind of locked in here. Even Besser's RFA. And once his contract's done and he's not signed, if you're looking to move him, that might be an easier sell because there is no money guaranteed next to him, right? So I'm with you. But for this team, let's say they take a different path and they want to redo the roster, all that work's going to have to come in the offseason. The trade deadline is really not going to be a big, big part of this unless they really get aggressive.
The one thing I would say is if you are going to entertain offers for any of those core pieces towards the deadline, you know, a contending team would say, well, if we're acquiring, as the name has been out there, JT Miller, I get two potential cup runs out of this player more than just one. It's the Blake Coleman conversation from a couple of years ago. Tampa did it with Coleman and Gaudreau at the same time, gave up a first-round pick for both of those players with the eye that they had great cap hits at the time, which is something that is very different from JT Miller. So that is a part of the conversation. But they had great cap hits, and they were signed for not just the rest of this current season, but they had another year left of control on their deals already signed. So you had cap certainties in terms of the number, and all of those factors were huge in the reasoning behind giving up first round picks for those players by Tampa Bay. So that's the one thing as a selling point to contenders you could have ahead of this deadline. But I think with a player of Miller's caliber, it has to be a conversation of, here's our price. If you're going to hit it, we'll think about it more than anything else. And maybe anybody can do that. Doesn't have to necessarily be a new guy.
Yeah, maybe you're in that. Like, the reason, and we got this text from Dex here saying, this is a hard listen to, because if you don't know what you want or who to hire, this is a stall tactic. Just buying more time to try to turn it around. GMs and coaches are a dime a dozen. Aquilini is trying to play this fan base. And goes on to further say, wake up. One thing I will say on this, that if you don't have the right person, hey, maybe it could be a stall tactic. Maybe you're giving your team a little bit more of a benefit of doubt to turn it around. I'm not saying that, you know, this is going to work. I still think there's long-term change coming, because one of the things we just talked about was, hey, you don't have to make those deals at the deadline because you still have some time. Reputationally, the Vancouver Canucks stock has taken a huge hit. Huge hit. So do you want to be going into another offseason, the second half of the year, with that same noise around this market? I don't think you can. So that's why I think change, when I talk about January, mid-January as being that cutoff, reputationally, the Canucks have to set a vision. And if you continue to have Jim Benning running the operation until later into the year, reputationally, you take a hit. You do. In this fan base, and yeah, potentially beyond, though. So I understand where Dex is coming, and maybe it is a stall tactic. But when I look at the situation, it's not about a let it go for the rest of the year. I think that would be reputationally bad. So January, when I talk about that second week of January, that's why I mention that, because, guys, this is more than just bad hockey. The yeah, organization is taking a hit.
But here's the thing when it comes to individual players too, right? Right now, this organization, I think, goes all the way to ownership. They have no interest in wanting to see JT Miller go anywhere.
Yep.
So if that's going to be the feeling too, a new guy comes in.
Right.
So I understand what everybody's saying. And hey, we can have a great conversation about direction, and, you know, it's not even necessarily academic, because I think you're at a point now where...
But what's reality?
There's, you know, but what is reality? And I don't think this organization wants to move JT Miller. I don't think this yeah, organization wants to move Bo Horvat. Yeah. I think, if anything, ownership really believes in this core, really believes in these players, and is a fan of a lot of these guys and wants to see them turn it around. Now, I do think you're at a point with Jim Benning that you just can't sell him any longer. And at some point, even if you want to hold on to him, you're going to have to let that one go. But as far as the coach goes, I do believe the owner believes in the coach, and I think the owner has heavily invested in the coach with the money he's invested in him as well, right? So that is a guy he doesn't want to get rid of right away. But as far as, you know, making a move and then coming up with a new direction and going to a mini rebuild, guys, I don't see that happening. You know, it's great to have this conversation. I just don't think there's any way this team's actually shopping JT Miller and Bo Horvat at the deadline. And if they do, that means a seismic shift happened with ownership. A massive shift happened with ownership. If all of a sudden, even if they make changes, we see those names on the trade block at the deadline.
It's the People's Show. Thank you for those that are sticking with us. I know we're having some technical issues. You'll be able to hear everything on the podcast, of course. Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Subscribe, leave a review. That's the best way to never miss an edition of the People's Show. Yannick Hansen is next on Sportsnet 650.
You're listening to The People's Show with Sat, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
What's up? It's The People's Show. As you know, Sportsnet 650's The People Show is presented by your local Grip Auto and Tire location. Winter Tire Service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. Yannick Hansen is going to join us in a few minutes. I know we've been having some trouble on our stream over the last little while, so appreciate your messages. We are working on it, But as Tups on Twitter says, the take on Canucks management was so bad we had to listen to Notre Dame Brian Kelly takes. I believe you're hearing CBS cut in and out on the stream. So that's what's happening.
I was thinking about this earlier, though. Dan Riccio is our very own Brian Kelly here at Sportsnet 650.
I'm Brian Kelly now?
Yeah, you fake accents just like he does.
Fake what? I don't know what you're talking about.
El Salvador.
Remember El Salvador.
One? Yeah, and then we had El Salvadorians texting and saying, stop it.
I do what I can. I try sometimes, maybe too much. All right, Canucks and Penguins tomorrow. Brian Burke is going to join us coming up after 4 o'clock here on the People's Show. Of course, with the Penguins organization now, Yannick Hansen in a few minutes here. Penguins are really interesting, and it's a chance for the Canucks, I guess, to get a bit of redemption for the performance they had in Pittsburgh 10 days ago. But and one thing that was really interesting to hear from the morning skate today was Quinn Hughes. And he talked about his partnership with Luke Shen. I do want to listen in on this quickly before we get to Yannick Hansen.
I think he just compliments me really well, and he's really good in the D zone. He's strong, and he keeps me focused in that end. And, you know, he moves it quick, and he's smart in the ozone, probably smarter than people give him credit for, and he's got a good head for it. So we've been, you know, working well together, and then obviously you saw his goal. So I really enjoy playing with him, and just got to keep going.
There is Quinn Hughes talking about his D partnership with Luke Shen and why it's working out so well. It's certainly gotten the best out of Quinn over the last couple of games. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Yannick Hansen, former Canuck forward, and joins us weekly here on the People's Show. Yannick, what's up?
Not too much. Looking forward to a weekend here. A lot of things going on, so it's always nice to see the little ones getting their extracurriculum in.
Yeah, it's 100%, and you finally got a couple of nice days as well, which we all needed.
That definitely helps change the scenery, whether it's on the ice or outside. It makes for the days to go by a little easier.
So we've been talking about this Canucks team, and hey, they got a couple of wins over Montreal and Ottawa, and not that I want to be that guy to critique wins too much, but at the same time, like watching those two games, Yannick, it did feel as though, you know, the Canucks were the better of some poor teams, some teams that aren't playing great structural hockey right now.
No, of course, everybody can look at the standing and see where those teams are situated. Those are teams they should be beating. It's the teams they're expecting to beat. Now we're going to be seeing a little more the teams you should be competing against here the next 5 or 6 games. It's teams that are pedaling right in that playoff threshold. So it'll be a good test to see if they've turned some sort of corner. They did play well in Boston. They did play well in Columbus as well. So they have generated more than just one or two game now of good hockey. They didn't get the results in those two games, but they were starting to play a little more consistency and had more guys chipping in as well, where throughout the bad stretches, if you will, there are very few guys going. It seemed that more and more guys are starting to catch on a little bit more, pitching in, scoring, whatever you will. So it seems like they might have turned a little bit of a corner. Whether or not it's a fluke, next couple of games here will show.
Well, I think for it not to be a fluke, Yannick, ultimately they're going to have to get Besser and Pedersen to be more like the players we've seen them be in the past, and they're not quite there yet. So when we assess their play, and you mentioned the trend they've been on, even the games they've lost recently, what will their best look like if and when, I guess it's a big if right now, you get Besser and Pedersen going?
Yeah, and that's the thing. We've seen they've been playing well these last couple of games now. Those two games are not, I wouldn't say not part of it, but they're not really a part of it as much as some of the other guys. It was still a lot of the usual suspects, if you will. Ottawa, Garland had a hell of a game. Miller had a hell of a game. Quinn had a hell of a game. Even Luke Shen showed up on the score sheet.
yeah.
But again, it was the same guy, and those three guys I just mentioned, those aren't the guys that we've been missing. They have been pitching in through the entire year. But we saw Bo, we saw Tanner Pearson a little bit more now. Pod Colson, Höglander are still doing their things. They're not getting a ton of production, but they're generating stuff out there. It looks like they're engaged in the game. So again, a couple more guys getting involved. But again, obviously, Besser and Petey, like you need those two at top of the game, contributing, creating matchup trouble, whatever you will. And again, we're not quite seeing it from those two. Again, getting them involved as well will only help them. And again, kind of show us what kind of team they are. This is, again, it's hard to judge a team when so many guys are off. It would be nice to see them clicking and again, doing it over an extended period of time, running into good teams, beating good teams when good team plays well as well. So there's a lot of little things that you'd like to see. Obviously, a lot of things need to go right for Vancouver right now. But again, the last four games here, they've taken some steps in the right direction.
Well, you talked about Luke Shen there, and yeah, he kind of channeled his inner Kevin Bieksa back in his prime, went for a little skate there, made a little move and got the goal. But, you know, Luke Shen playing next to Quinn Hughes just seems like it fits better than Tucker Pullman. It feels like Shen is a little bit more consistent, knows his role, doesn't really try to do too much, whereas Tucker Pullman sometimes takes the unnecessary chance. Would you agree?
Yeah, so again, it's tough to... Luke Shen, I thought he had a tough game in Montreal. Some costly, or not costly, but some turnovers that turned into big opportunities against. Again, he's more of a type of player I'd like to see like next to Hughes than Pullman. Luke Shen provides something that I'd say just about nobody else on this team provide. He provides some toughness. Quinn doesn't have to worry about getting his face washed in front of the net because he will step in. Again, he has that little mean streak to him, not little. He finishes checks hard as well. He will fight just about anybody. So again, I like that type of defenseman. If you're playing with Quinn Hughes, you might see 20 some minutes a night. I don't think we want Shen out there for that much. So it is a tough situation, but again, he fits a little bit better than Pullman, that for sure. Maybe not every minute out there with him, but definitely look like it's something they can build on a little bit.
One thing I always find interesting, Yannick, is, I mean, we always talk about doing things differently, but doing things differently doesn't always mean better results. It just means you could have tried something different than what you saw. And I know it's easy to look at Pullman, and I think he has struggled, obviously, but what is it sometimes that we see guys play a sheltered third pair role and you see a guy and you're like, this guy's really good, but he's playing a sheltered role. He's playing 12, 13 minutes and he looks fantastic doing so. But then once he gets elevated, it's a lot harder to do those things. Just because somebody is playing a bigger role doesn't mean that somebody else was not playing that role would give you better results. Or do you think the coaches have a good grasp of that and not playing Burrows, say, more than Pullman?
Again, it's as soon as you get elevated, you see different matchups. I know we look at teams and these teams play against each other, but that's not the case. If you start boiling it down, matchups are so key. And if you're playing a sheltered minutes, well, you will see the other third and fourth line, which aren't as good offensively. They won't get as many shots on net. They won't get the same quality shots. You won't get scored on as often. Chances are you're going to be pushing the puck the other way. So there's a lot of things that goes into that. Like as soon as you get elevated, it's kind of like trial by fire. Can you play at this level? Can you play? Because it's not just playing in the NHL. There's playing 10 minutes in the bottom six, and there's playing 20 minutes in the top six in the NHL. And those are two completely different sports almost. So it does take a lot once you elevate or put a guy down a couple of lines, whether you will. So it is definitely, you got to see if you have your game. And again, once you're playing top six, you can't just be expected to throw it off the glass and out. No, these guys are going to be expecting to get the puck on your tape, not in your feet so it goes the other way and you get scored on. It's one of those things where all of a sudden you're playing a faster game, more detailed game. Pressure comes from being on the ice with guys that expect to be scoring, but they also expect you to be contributing. Can't just be out there and throw up my, okay, I'm out here with four really good players here. Let's just, you guys take the puck and I'll just worry about myself. No, you still got to join in, and all of a sudden maybe you're playing a game you're not familiar with, you're not used to, and that's when guys get out of their depth.
What'd you think of JT Miller's goal the other night?
Yeah, if his name would have been McDavid, we would have seen it everywhere. But again, he plays in Vancouver and is not named that. So again, it's exactly the same thing. He walks right through three or four guys and scores. Great to see. Wish he would get a little bit more recognition. Other players do it once in a while too, not once a month. But again, tremendous to see.
Yeah, it was. And we've really felt it this year, given, you know, Pettersson being kind of in the doldrums for so long and still waiting to see him really get back to his former self. But JT has really emerged as a player that is so, so important. But given the results, you know, obvious trade rumors are going to continue flying around the city and speculation about the future of the core. When it comes to JT Miller, is that a player you think the Canucks have to keep?
Well, I think you have 20, 30 games here to figure that out. First of all, you're going to play the next 20, 30 games here. Obviously, like, they matter a lot. And you're going to see if the first 20 games we saw were a fluke or whatever you will, and can they turn a corner and be the team we expected them to be? If they are the latter, where we're okay, they're playing pretty good now, they're playing at a pace where they would have been a shoe into playoff spot, you're keeping him, no question. You keep building through the next year, hope for the best towards the end of the year. If we keep pedaling around mediocrity and things aren't going well, again, the direction is what the team will rebuild, retool. Those are all consideration that goes into what you're doing. But again, the last thing is asset management. If you're looking for some sort of build, you need to get something for your valued players. And whenever the value is at the highest, it's normally at the deadline. Everybody knows that teams will overpay for just about anything at that time. So again, that's probably the time you're going to take a look at it. And that's also a time where you know what direction you're going as a team, not just for this year, but for the next two or three years.
Well, the question, too, is, you know, there are a lot of guys, whether it's JT, there's Bo, and there's got to be big decisions made, right? Because only 1 year left on their deals. Bo, JT, and then RFA, who's Brock Besser at the end of the season. Not only is it a question of what you want to do, when it comes to JT and Bo, isn't the bigger question what they want, if you even want to keep them beyond the next couple of years?
I don't know what kind of protection they have in their deal, but at that moment, it's up to the club, general manager, ownership. What do you want to do? And if you're looking at a retool, rebuild, then you got to move them. If you're looking to, okay, we just got to make the playoff next year, then you got to keep them. It all depends what direction gets passed down from this point. It's probably from Francesco. If he's saying, oh, we want to make the playoff, we want to compete, then you're keeping them, no question. And you're trying to add some pieces that'll help them pushing in that direction. If it's Jim or somebody else that comes in and says, no, this is a longer deal here, it's going to take us 3 or 4 years, kind of have to start not quite over, but again, a lot of new faces, then you got to move them. Again, you got to keep looking at the age number. It's not the most important thing, but when you are rebuilding a team, that they do need to fit a certain criteria. Mm-hmm. This league is getting younger and younger. So if you're planning on competing, you don't want a bunch of 32, 33, 34-year-olds at that time. No, you want them in their mid-20s, late 20s the latest. So they have a couple of years with that window open.
Well, they can move both guys. Then the trade protection stuff, it doesn't apply to those guys, at least not in a restrictive way at all. The bigger question is, and I know you can't answer this for them, but based on everything that's happened, how much desire do you think there would be for them to even want to extend their contract after not having a lot of success here? And isn't that one of the things you got to do, right?
That's very tough to answer. I was kind of split when it was my turn, because, like, yeah, I went to a tremendous situation in San Jose. They just came from a cup run, just about the same team coming back, looked poised to do it again, ran into some bad injuries right before Couture and Jumbo went down and were, yeah, playing at about 50% in the playoffs. So, but again, looking back, I would have rather stayed in Vancouver, been around here helping out. It didn't turn out in San Jose, which is probably also one of those reasons. So, again, family will play in. Again, do they feel like they have enough years left on them that they feel like, okay, if we wait 3 years, I'm still going to be peak. I can still contributing. Then maybe so. Or do they want to chase a ring and say, you know, okay, yeah, move me to not the highest bidder, but a chance where I can get a chance to win?
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Yannick Hansen, as we are every Friday. And Yannick, the next team does signify a little bit an increase in degree of difficulty. It's the Pittsburgh Penguins, and their biggest star, number 87, Sidney Crosby. I always like asking former players or current players, you know, about playing Crosby, because what we see and what we marvel at on TV is one thing, but when you go to head-to-head against him, you know, what are the things that impress you, and what is the most challenging part about playing a special player like that?
Yeah, he's not as flashy as he does do it occasionally, but again, we wouldn't see them that often, but we would play against him. It was like, okay, yeah, I guess he was playing today. Didn't really see, he won a lot of face-offs, controlled the puck, and then you look at the score sheet afterward, and he has 3 points. He does everything well. Always control the pace of the game, has the puck, makes the plays, very good defensively, good on draws. Obviously everything you want in a hockey player, and done it for so long. He just does it with a little bit less flair than I think we see a lot of the new young kids coming in that are highlight reel after highlight reel, if you will. But again, very, very, very good hockey player, obviously.
One of your two hat tricks came against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, I know. They look for offense, those guys. So there's obviously a little bit more. When we played Pittsburgh, it was a lot of easier. I think we lost one of them like 7-5 or 6-5 or something like that, back and forth. So they love to go. A lot of their lineups back when we were playing them too were very heavy up front. I mean, they had Letang, but after that, it was their money was spent on offense a lot of the years. So they gave up a lot, and they also took a lot.
Yannick, we appreciate your time as always. I know the listeners do as well. Thank you for this. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Enjoy the weekend.
There is Yannick Hansen. You as well. Enjoy the weekend.
We were having some technical difficulties earlier. We're back now. This text. As long as I can listen to Yanhan, it's all good. Yanhan.
The Yanhan.
Is that a new nickname for Yannick Hansen?
Yannick Hansen had 5 goals, 3 assists in 11 games against the Pittsburgh Penguins through his career.
Not bad.
Not a bad return for Yannick Hansen against that club. And the one hat trick, but it ended in a 5-4 loss.
Mm.
So,
remember a couple of years ago when the Canucks played Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, and it was an 8-6 or something?
Yeah.
Gino Malkin had like a 5-point game.
And they completely capitulated in the third period.
Yeah, they went down like a ton of bricks. Like it was bad.
It was ugly.
I'm pretty sure I was working the post game with you that night, Sat. It was ugly. Bad game.
Evgeny Malkin just went into like hero mode, and it was over after that. No Gino for the Penguins tomorrow night, but Sidney Crosby will be in the lineup. Some great takes from Yannick, and you know, you really get the feel of a player, you know, thinking about what's best for the team ultimately when you're making these big decisions. It's ultimately, and you alluded to this, Zach, going to come down to ownership. Now, these are valued assets mm-hmm. by ownership. And for good reason, they're good hockey players. But what's your goal for next year? And if it is to try and push and try to reset whatever you can and get to the playoffs again or push towards the playoffs, which has been this ownership's MO, then it's hard to see them making a decision where, you know, Bo or Miller or even Brock moves on. You may have to make one decision out of the three just out of necessity, but It's hard to imagine this team getting a whole lot better if you're trading any of those guys.
Well, and that's the thing. Unless you take the approach of, hey, long-term, bit of a rebuild or whatever, like Yannick said, you got to get assets for him if that's what you're doing because of the age discrepancy and everything else kind of going on. But if that's not what you want to do, it gets dicey. And then the other part of it, and you heard Yannick's reaction, do they want to stay? Because if you're in a situation where it's not sure how you're trending, what desire do they have to stay? And I believe from the organization's perspective, those two players, Miller and Horvat, are so important and big to this organization that that's not something they wanted to do at the deadline, I don't think. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I see it kind of being maybe like the Kessler situation where perhaps they'll explore to see what's out there just to kind of get an idea of what teams might be offering. But ultimately, let's decide what we want to do with that come the off season before the next season begins. And let's really assess what we want to do. That's my guess. And that's not me reporting on anything. That's just the way I see it. And like I mentioned before, for them to even consider moving Miller or Horvat, there has to be a seismic shift of how those players are viewed and how they view the direction of the team when it comes to their core.
Well, there's even more skin in the game with Bo Horvat because he's the captain, right? So even thinking of moving off a captain, that, and especially in this city, like there, it rarely happens.
Yeah.
So there is history there of like, you know.
The owner knows.
Yeah, exactly. Beyond that, though, and we talk about a president of hockey ops and all of that and setting the direction, the vision. The vision does come from the owner. So as much as we want to say, hey, you know, having that direction, having somebody in that seat at some point is going to be nice and it's going to set a direction, that vision is still going to have to be approved and if not, you know, dictated by the owner. So, yeah, that's a big point on this. So when we think about solutions and potential moves and all of that, it does come back to one individual, and his name is Francesco Aquilini.
Yeah.
It's the People's Show coming up. Brian Burke, president of hockey ops with the Pittsburgh Penguins. He will join us. Penguins in town tomorrow against the Canucks. You're listening on Sportsnet 650.